Welcome to All Things Cage at Wave Farms WGXC 90.7 FM, radio for open ears. I'm your host, Laura Kuhn, director of the John Cage Trust, and my guest this week is Stefano Pocci, who we fondly refer to here at the Cage Trust as our Italian correspondent, for his tireless sleuthing into all things having to do with John Cage in Italy. He originally set out to discover the whereabouts of the long-missing footage of Cage's 1959 appearances on Lascia Ora Doppia, a popular Italian quiz show on which Cage made 5 weekly appearances as a contestant, answering a string of increasingly difficult questions on the subject of mushrooms posed by the show's host, Mike Bongiorno. Cage was triumphant, winning the grand prize of 5 million lira, or roughly $8,000, which went toward the purchase of a grand piano for Cage's Stony Point home, as well as a Volkswagen bus for the fledgling Merce Cunningham Dance Company. He also gave musical presentations on 3 of the shows, a demonstration of the prepared piano sounds of Amores on January 29th, as well as live performances of Water Walk on February 5th and Sounds of Venice on February 12th, both premieres. While Stefano has not been successful in finding the missing footage, he's managed to unearth a wealth of related materials, most of which can be found on his amazing website, johncage.it. Along the way, he's also garnered devoted friends and colleagues from all over the world, including me. I encourage listeners to check out his marvelous autobiographical statement, which is available on his website. And for a summary of his work and a rich sampling of what he's uncovered, go to Kuhn's blog at johncage.org, to which Stefano was an invited contributor. Welcome to All Things Cage, Stefano. What time is it there in Estonia, and what's your weather like?
Hi there. It's 6 o'clock here in the afternoon, so it's 6 p.m. And I wish I could show you, but it's dark here already, you know, the infamous darkness of the northern countries. It's less dark though, because it's fully white. There is so much snow. It has been snowing a lot recently. So it's a very nice weather actually. I really like it when it's not so dark actually anymore. It's late here compared to where you are.
That's exactly right. We're making a nighttime program, but it's actually 11 o'clock in the morning here in New York. You have a new addition to your little family. You have a small son now named Leo. I know that you're living in Estonia, and you've been living in Estonia for quite a while, but how often do you get to Italy now?
Well, I would say usually I go twice a year to Italy. Last year, obviously, was a bit of an exception. We went only once when this COVID outbreak was, you know, a bit less strong. So I'm talking about summertime now. But generally twice a year I go, for example, Christmas time I go, and summer, usually Christmas and summer. Yeah. And I've been living here already for consecutively over 6 years.
You still have family in Italy?
I do. My parents are in Viareggio, Tuscany. That's where they are. My brother is in Rome. And I have other relatives, you know, cousins, either in Tuscany or Rome.
Is that where you live in Italy, in Tuscany?
Yes, I live in, when I go to Tuscany, I go to Viareggio. That's where my hometown, where I was born. And it's a nice town near the sea, used to be like a resort town, let's say. A lot of tourists would come in summer, and it's a really nice weather, much higher temperature than here in Tallinn. But what it's here, and probably, I don't know if Cage would have appreciated this, but it's definitely quieter here.
I think he would have. He once told me that he dreamed of moving to Bolivia. And I said, why Bolivia? And he said, because nobody's interested in music there, in modern music. And that was only the result of, you know, people always wanting something from him, always wanting compositions or him to come to concerts or whatever. So I think he probably would appreciate the quiet. So what are you up to these days, research-wise?
Well, I actually have Like the parable, I mean, the trajectory of Cage in Italy is kind of, delimited by, his death. Like he came two months before his death. He made the last appearance in Italy. I think you were there too.
That's correct. We went to Perugia.
And before that, like one day in Florence or a half a day where he was in Florence, because there is a.
We visited with the American musicologist, Wiley Hitchcock, who was living there with his wife.
Okay. And the beginning of this trajectory would be when he went there as a, from a musical perspective, because I know that he has been to Italy when he was very young. Probably went by, the southern of Italy, the nice southern coast of Italy. But from a musical perspective, I think if this festival in Palermo and Milan in 1949, when he was sent as a correspondent for this American, what was the name? The newspaper, some musical America, I think it was
Right.
something like. So he wrote an article. It was kind of a very interesting review that he made of that contemporary festival. There was a bit of this Italian tendency of organizing things in a creative way, let's put it this way.
I like that.
So yeah, he was a bit perplexed, and but at the same time he liked some performances. It was a mixed reviews, I would say, the overall feeling that you can get from that article. So this year I translated that into Italian because it was originally written in English, and I added to my website. This was 2020. I say this year, but actually it's already a new year.
Exactly.
And another thing that it's coming, but I'm waiting to augment, to find more stuff before opening this other section, is another appearance that he did at the end of his life in 1991. That would be this Ferrara Festival that was dedicated to Cage and Ives and Thoreau. And so he was there, and pieces of him were played. So I want to open a section just like for every event that he instigated, or he promoted, or he was invited to in Italy, is been already featured in my site. Now that these are the two aces in the hole that I have. One is already out and the other one is coming, and I have plans for the future for two pages actually in my website. One would celebrate the link or the friendship between the singer Demetrios Stratos and John Cage. And the other one, even if it's not an Italian person, but Kathy Berberian, for sure, it was an Italian friendship in the sense, because she was the, when they met, she was the wife of Luciano Berio, right? So the friendship definitely was born in Italy. So I think it makes sense. Though I don't know when these two pages will be added. I would like to be thorough. I would like to find references, enough material to write something which is not 10 lines.
Yes,
But
of course,
it
of
takes
course.
time to do so, to do that, it takes time. Yeah.
Do you know about the new book that just came out of Puerto Rico by Nelson Rivera, which is a series of conversations that Nelson had with Kathy Berberian?
No, I think you mentioned it earlier in our correspondent emails. You mentioned that, and you were reading it at the time. I didn't know anything about it, to be
It's quite
honest.
good. It's quite good. She's, of course, fluent in English, so it's very, what's the word, chatty. It has a very, like a chat tone in her conversations with Nelson. It's very nice. And you know Christina, the daughter?
Yeah, I met her once. I think I had some stuff to give her, like materials that, because you see, I wouldn't have known about Kathy without Cage. So in my research, I bumped into her, and I really was struck by the wit, really of the, I would say the wit, not even the voice. She to me is a very witty person, Kathy Berberian, and very smart and open and very funny, and really a great woman and a great singer, obviously. Very versatile, that I like
Yeah.
in
Cage
general.
was very fond of her. he wanted her for everything whenever he was doing performances, in particular whenever he programmed Aria. He wanted Kathy. He wanted Kathy.
It was there at his disposal, so to speak, in Milan. So yeah, you guys, he used her for that. Yeah,
that's nice. You're also singing in a rock band.
It's a fun project that we have with colleagues at work. It's crazy that basically I'm in this IT company I work for. There are people that are, you know, they have their own hobbies, weird ones, nerdy ones, but also more, you know, like normal ones, like music. I always felt like I should have done this before, but I think I live as a tourist still in Estonia in a Cajun sense, that people don't know me, so I can do whatever I want and I don't feel judged. So I don't care. I would have never done it in Italy probably. But here in Estonia, I'm a free man. I don't have the burden of my with me. So, and it's actually fun. I'm not a good singer, but I just like to do it. And so I don't care if it's not super professional. We just have fun, and that's good.
Are you a good performer?
Let's just say that in the few performances that we did in front of our colleagues, which is like almost 200 people, so it's not a small crowd. But I would say that in the beginning, I was trying not to show all the craziness that I had inside. Otherwise, they would say, oh, guy, we need to fire this guy. He's mad or something. So I tried to contain myself.
But I didn't realize that you have a proper job in IT. What do you do?
I'm a software developer. And the company I'm working for is doing... slot game, so gambling. We're talking about gambling. I don't know. It's crazy that in this part of the world, there is all kinds of IT jobs basically, and they're all about money transfers and gambling. So in one case, it's like it doesn't seem as legit, but basically, it's the same. I would say in some way and somehow and. I actually really like this company. I mean, the colleagues are super, super nice. Everything is friendly. I would have never pictured myself. I studied robotics.
So you're interested in AI?
Yes and no. I got kind of skeptical in the future, in the later stages of my life. You know, I probably become wiser, or I don't know if that's correct to say, but I am a bit more, I like a controlled progress. I'm not too much into smarting up people's lives because I think it actually makes life duller in some sense. I still prefer to use my brain to remember things rather than check on Google.
Yes.
Right? I kind of developed this attitude.
I feel this way with regard to GPS devices. So if I'm in New York City walking with someone and we're looking for a place that we're going to, this person constantly pulls out his telephone to find out how to get there. And I knock his hands away. And I say, no, we're going to figure this out. We're going to use our brains to figure this out. But I'm in the minority. I'm definitely in the minority on that.
Yeah, you are. I am. I know. And it doesn't matter. I will, as long as I'm not, you know, pushed to it or forced upon, I can try to use my brain as much as I can.
That's right. How is it having a baby at home?
Well, it was tough, mainly I would say because we are alone in a sense. So my parents are obviously not available because they are in Italy. And also my wife's parents, they don't live next door. They live like 30 kilometers from here or 25. So they're not right outside ready to come when there is need. But on the other hand, in Estonia, the maternity leave is ridiculously long.
How long?
Compared to America, and you wouldn't believe it. You can go up to 3 years.
Really?
So basically, you can give birth, and then the next thing you know, you can go back to work when you drop your kid to kindergarten.
Sounds great.
it sounds great, but it's also very tough because if you are alone all this time, it takes a toll, like on your mind, really. Having just to deal with a small kid all the time for 3 years, yeah, it's a bit hard.
Leo is three now?
It's 2 months and 2 years old. He's starting to speak, and I'm speaking to him in Italian. My wife is speaking to him in Estonian, but since the kindergarten teachers are Estonian, he's speaking Estonian. I can see that he's speaking up Estonian words, but he knows also a few Italian words, and he understands. I see he understands.
Amazing. Children have a way of not only changing your life, but in the day-to-day, but changing the way you see yourself. No?
I can comment on that in this regard, that I started to think about myself, not at Leo's age, because I'm sorry if I say Leo, that's the Italian and Estonian way to say it, right? So it's not Leo, like that would be the English way. I started to think about myself at his age, not at 2 years old, obviously, but I started to think about myself when I was, I don't know, probably 7 or 8 or 6, and I was very, it's like a reflection of yourself there in front of you. And yeah, it brings back memories from those times. It's crazy. Yeah. Very interesting.
So let's talk about you and Cage. You know, the perennial question, of course, is, do you think we'll ever find this footage?
I got a feeling that we're not going to, simply because too many people have already tried. And at this stage, I would say that some people claim to have seen it, right, in recent times. And by recent times, I mean 90s or early 90s. But who knows, maybe they saw this water walk of, of I've Got a Secret that happened exactly a year later. So more or less, although they claim also to have seen Mike Bongiorno. So that's the host. And obviously that couldn't be I've Got a Secret clip. But yeah, I would say that at this point, it's either that it got surely lost in the archives of the national TV Italian, RAI. I think it's lost there. Or if it's there, it's, under, I don't know, under so many meters of dust that you need to dig to find it. And, like I wrote in my autobiographical statement, if you want to, use this solemn word for that, at some point I stopped caring about that, because I thought it was more interesting to use it as an excuse, to excuse to meet people and to really, and it came without purpose, like really, like it didn't come because I wanted to find them. It just, came kind of naturally. And so that's what remains with me about this search, even if this footage will never show up.
Of course, it's actually one of the most beautiful things about your autobiographical statement, which is how you talk about, the transition from I'm looking for footage to I'm looking for whatever finds me or whoever finds me. And that's kind of Cagean, isn't it? It's almost like chance operations in a weird way. You set up a structure in which you work, and then whatever happens, happens.
Mm-hmm. And I can say that at that time when I, I started, I was less busy. So so I poured a lot of energy into it. And now I see that I have less time. Over the years, I have, reduced my activity in that direction. But every now and then I still get emails to my info@johncage.it of people who are asking where I can find materials. So it has become kind of a reference for some people to find, at least a starting point, so that they can start looking into, if they want more information, they can know where to go, either asking me or looking at specific links that I have in my website. So I think that was the original idea of the site, to keep it there and to grow it over time. And yeah, it did. Now at a bit slower pace, but
yeah. It's incredibly rich. You smiled when I said we think of you as our Italian correspondent, for all things Cage in Italy. But it's really true. I mean, your website really does cover all the bases, or at least all the bases that are known to me. I mean, there may be more, but I don't know. Do you ever consider that your work is nearly done?
maybe not done, but I had in mind almost from the very beginning of this endeavor that this trajectory was kind of limited in time. And so there should have been, there are only a certain amount of documents about it. It's not, they're not going to grow, because I'm not interested in, I don't know, something that happened in 1995, because, you know, KJ was dead by then. So I was focusing exactly when he was alive and whenever he was, you know, stepping into our border in our country to witness, to share the testimonies and, you know, all the traces that we can, that I could find about it. For example, one interesting thing is that I found an article by Eugenio Montale describing Cage. Eugenio Montale, it might be not so known, well known out of Italy, but he's one of the greatest latest poets of Italy. And he had a career as a journalist also in this Corriere della Sera. And he was writing about music. And he was reviewing some contemporary music concert, and he described some works of Cage, or he used Cage as a reference to describe and to review other works. And that was an interesting find, because I would have never expected this big guy that everybody knows in Italian literature as a poet to, you know, pop as in a musical review, review of music. Yeah, that was, so these are kind of the little mushrooms that you can bump into when you start digging, right?
I couldn't agree more. I couldn't agree more. You think you're heading in one direction and you're thrown onto a left curve somewhere, and you couldn't have imagined what you'll find when you do that. Going back to your initial pursuit, what is it in you, do you think, and maybe your upbringing, your family, your circumstances of your childhood, whatever, that made you so receptive to Cage? Because you became, you know, very quickly, I think you talk about your first introduction was really conversing with Cage in terms of a body of writings.
Indeed, yeah. I first met him in an article of this Italian magazine of music, more about rock, alternative music, if you want to use labels, you know, to describe, to be very generic, you know. And this article in Italian, I couldn't really figure it out. It was like an overview of Cage work, like from A to Z to Z, but the Italian was hard. Really the Italian, so I couldn't understand. And the content was hard because it was kind of, I couldn't grasp it really. So it remained like a chip over my shoulder for a few years.
How old were you when this happened?
Almost 24. And I was really consuming a lot of music from a lot of play, from a lot of directions. But this guy, really, I couldn't understand. Is he making music? What is he doing? You know, like I couldn't really figure it out. So at some point out of the blue, I decided to buy, because I saw it in a bookstore, this nice volume. I bought later Conversing with Cage, the original in English, but the Italian version that Edizioni Socrates made, it's a lavish book. It's really hardcover. It's the paper is very nice. So everything is beautiful. And since I basically don't read, it's a shame. If you see my house in Viareggio, it's filled with books of all, I mean, literature, art, you know, science, because my father is a chemist. So yeah, there's a book, but I don't read. We are really a bad generation, me and my brother, about that. We don't read. But that book, it really caught me off guard in some sense. I wasn't expecting this kind of completely different approach to whatever, you name it, basically. For me, it was really revelatory. Funnily enough, few months before, I bought a Mammal's Notebook by Satie, without knowing that Satie and Cage, there was a link between the two of them. And sure enough, I went back to the other book of Satie, and there was a note about Vexations, the 1963 performance, the first execution of that, where Cage obviously was one of the promoters. And yeah, that book was really mind blowing for me. It was one of the two times in my life where I felt I could do anything. whatever I can do. If this guy operated this way, I can really, I felt free. Really free. It was a very good, very incredible feeling, really. Yeah.
That's funny, because that is definitely the way a lot of musicians much older than you actually describe their encounter with Cage, that the influence was freedom, that they could in fact do. Laurie Anderson has said that. There's just many people who said that about John Cage. I can't help but think about when he went to Darmstadt and he read indeterminacy stories. These are stories for our listening audience, which are the structure is that they're each told in 1 minute. They're very anecdotal. They are interrupted or not by Cage music played by David Tudor originally. But here he was in this revered intellectual, musically intellectual space in Darmstadt and giving presentation with these little stories. And at the time, it was questionable how useful that was, but given not too much time after that, Darmstadt owned him. They just felt like he was theirs, that he had brought this very, very unique and special thing to this otherwise very staid and intellectual space. Somebody said something like, well, we don't know how much you contributed, but you certainly improved the cuisine.
This thing about indeterminacy reminds me actually of once, it's very similar to a story that I read in an interview of Kathy. And I think we published that, when I say we, I mean me and my friend Daniele and Walter, a few years ago, we did this little booklet or whatever, your issue of this magazine that we designed and we produced. And it was an issue dedicated to Cage, where we gathered this 100 contributions from Italian people that had known Cage. And we, thanks to Cristina Berio, we also had Kathy in words saying something about Cage, even if she wasn't Italian. The thing that she was telling happened in Italy and definitely was, you know, after her encounter with Cage. And so there was a concert in Rome where she was performing, you know, some of John's pieces. And the reaction of the audience, you can imagine, you know, like contemporary music in Rome in the late 50s is not exactly in a traditional scenario or traditional environment like a theater in Rome. It wasn't really well welcomed or warmly welcomed, on the contrary. And so when there was this debate at the end of the concert and Cage was called to explain, and when he went there, instead of explaining, I did this because of that, he just told one of those Zen stories. And everybody was like, what the hell is he talking about? I would like to see the reaction of the faces, you know, of the, but everybody was kind of, you know, like they... He brought a completely different perspective. I don't know. He had this capability, and his charisma was really, I think it was already strong back in the days, I think.
Going back to your work, what has excited you the most in things that you've found? You know, and there's been a lot of things that you've found, Stefano. I mean, it's been how many years? So your autobiographical statement, roughly how many years does that cover? It's a lot of material. It's about 8 or 9 pages.
Yeah, it's covered. It's basically, when I started to dig, it was 2005. And I really remember this because the first person I decided to contact about this, if it's not the first, it's the second, but my memory can serve me wrong in this case. But anyway, this person was a guy working in Rai. He's well known among the Italian people who love complicated movies or weird movies or intellectual movies, because he makes this kind of late night programs made of hours of unknown movies that nobody watches. Nobody knows anything about them. Well, they do now. And I thought this guy might know, because he was pulling out every now and then weird snippets of Rai television with, I don't know, weird characters or people you would not have expected to be on television at all. So I went to him, and this guy's name is Enrico Ghezzi. And he, I know he's a strange person or not, maybe, I don't know, responding, but he replied to my email 20 minutes after I wrote it. And then I tried to contact him later. He never replied again. And his reply for me is like a, it's like a statement. It's like a statement. I was really, it gave me like, it spurred me to continue basically. In other words, that was what, that the beginning was very cool. It was 2005. And when I opened the site, it was 2012. So you see 7 years. And during those 7 years, I found other materials like this Che Musica e Musica, which is a pity. It was released in Italy officially a few years after I found it, luckily. But imagine this, a program conducted by Luciano Berio. Okay, so we're talking about a composer, musician, interviewing all the living composers. We're talking about 1972. So basically a lot of contemporary composers were all alive. There was Aaron Copland, Bernstein, Cage, Xenakis, you name. I didn't see Feldman. And Morton Feldman, I did not see, but Lucas Foss, Cornelius Cardew, you name them. And it was I was hoping to find pieces of, since it was a RAI program, I thought it was a good lead to this video of Cage at the Quiz Show. Maybe they have it featured there, in the 70s. But I didn't see it there. It's not. But I discovered an interesting 12 episodes. We're talking about 1 hour per episode. And imagine 1 hour per episode, all into Luciano Berio and this other guys going around Europe and the world and in America, obviously, interviewing these composers. It was simply, it's simply amazing to think that a television was allowing such program to exist. Today, I wouldn't, I don't know, HBO producing that. It's not wrong.
But I sort of felt that way about the I've Got a Secret, because I've Got a Secret, really across the board had such interesting people on it as contestants, John Keynes being one of them. That it was just so, we just don't have television like that anymore. And Gary Moore was the host, was so open-minded and funny. And he didn't make fun of Cage. He also didn't back away from things that he found funny. You know what I mean? So he would say, gee, Mr. Cage, this is all very interesting, but this is going to be new to some of these people in our audience, and some of them might laugh. Is that all right? And so that was a lovely putting everybody at ease and allowing them in the audience to respond however they responded without feeling foolish. We just don't have that anymore. And television at that time was such a young form, but not 72. So it's doubly surprising when you say that. Yeah. I put on these interviews. Was Berio a good interviewer?
I would say that the program was actually not just him interviewing, it was structured with, like, there was a puppet mocking Berio, making questions.
Seriously?
Yeah, it was not just plain interviews, like a selection of me. It was more, concocted in a very nice, in a nice way. I was really marveled by this, by this program. Really, I wish they could do. I mean, this is kind of a thing that unfortunately, I think for rights problems, copyrights problems, it's not possible, because it is absolutely. If you study music, in classical environment, you should see this program. I don't see any reason why you shouldn't see it, because it's there are not all the interviewed people, gave smart answers probably, or, super interesting. But anyway, it's still the overall thing. It's really great. And it should have been, at least subtitles. Or the weird thing is that everything in Italian is dubbed, because of course the interviewed people were interviewed in French or English. There is Darius Milhaud also there interviewed. But they dubbed it in Italian. So maybe that also weird to undo the dub or put subtitles to people who are speaking actually their own language to after translating the Italian dubbing. But yeah, it's a pity. I would have, I was at some point convincing or trying to convince Mode Records, I think, to do something about it. But, then after, the DVD era kind of died. I mean, the DVD are kind of prehistoric material today. Yeah,
well, most fixed recorded things are, not dead, but and not, I wouldn't say dying, but they're definitely not, you know, in the forefront the way, say, that streaming is. We want, nobody will believe me if I say, you know, something doesn't exist. It's not available. They take that as their personal mission to find it, in terms of, you know, it's got to be on some indie film or indie something streaming channel somewhere that nobody knows about. You know, I have to say that I interviewed Berio when I was a graduate student. I don't remember why he was in town, and I don't remember why I was interviewing him, but I was. And he was staying in this very fancy, I think it was the Intercontinental Hotel in Los Angeles. I was in graduate school at UCLA. And I remember going to, I took someone with me. I don't remember who that was. We're talking now, I don't know, 35 years ago, 30, 35 years ago. But anyway, what I do remember vividly is going into his hotel room, which is where he wanted to do the interview. And he had ordered room service drinks for us, which were things, canned sodas and things like that. And he had a very hard time focusing on my questions because he mostly wanted to talk about food.
Okay.
It was very, very amusing. I liked him very much. For those of you listening, I'm talking with Stefano Pucci, who is the most knowledgeable person I know on all things Cage in Italy. Luciano Berio comes to the fore a lot in this conversation because Luciano Berio was involved with Cage's sustained visit in 1959 in Milan at the I forget the name of the, what's the name of the studio, Stefano?
In Italian it would be Studio di Fonologia.
Yes, yes, Fonologia, which is how Cage ended up on the radio, I mean the mushroom quiz show on television, because he was in Milan already. And, you know, it just got word out that he was an expert on mushrooms, which he was. And he became something of a celebrity in Italy. Cage remembered that he would be walking down the street in between shows. The shows aired on Thursday nights. And there would be, you know, two or three little Italian ladies all huddled together waiting for a bus. And they would giggle when he walked by and look at him, you know, trying not to be too obvious about it. He enjoyed that very much.
Yeah, I mean, this quiz show was super popular in Italy, and not everybody had televisions at that time. So people would gather to see the television in probably in bars or, you know, in public spaces. And there weren't so many programs. There was probably the news, some movies, and then this quiz show, which was entertainment. So for people, it was an entertainment. And probably 20 million people were looking each episode of Lascia Raddoppia. I'm just throwing a number there, a random number. Just saying that no wonder Cage, even if it was Cage walking around Milan, people would, you know, point the finger at him, because obviously when you're there, you're under the spotlight.
Yeah. Do you have a feeling for John Cage in Italy today that you can share with us? Like, what is the reception of Cage in Italy?
No, it's... In a way, it's a bit hard because I'm not a musician. So I wouldn't know, for example, truly a musical perspective, that's at least where you would usually think Cage of, you know, or with music, even though we touched on so many different topics. I'm not able to say that. If it's, I would say that today, after seeing, some years ago, I saw this I've Got a Secret clip projected during a musical program conducted by a jazz pianist who is very, very funny, Stefano Bollani. And when I saw that, they tried to do 4 minutes and 33 seconds, like a funny version of it, like a cabaret version of it, with other people in the studio. When I saw that, I thought, okay, he's already part of it was already digested by the system. Cage is no longer this... avant-garde, experimental, whatever you at the forefront, he was already part of history. Kind of is music has moved on, kind of in some way. It was assimilated. So I guess that today people are playing Cage more often. I would imagine so. I wouldn't be surprised. I know sometimes of some concerts because artists maybe tell me that, oh, we performed this of Cage, but myself trying to think about or search of Cage in Italy today, it's quite hard, especially if you're out of the media, social media platforms like me. I want to stay out of that, but that of course where everything is going on. So if I'm missing a lot of interesting things, I know it's my policy. It's just me searching. I wouldn't know now, to be honest, what's Cage in Italy. I think I can just say that I can also add one last thing is recently I found a place called the John Cage Center, and they were inspired by the figure of John Cage. Imagine like a little school in the south of Italy, which is usually considered like a little bit less, Milan and the north is considered the wealthy part of Italy, and the south is kind of diminished or not so much considered. But even then, even over there, they opened a John Cage Center, which is a school for psychology, music, all kinds of different activities. And the reason why they took the name is because John Cage was such an open-minded person that, yeah, opened a lot of avenues to a lot of things and to a lot of people.
Here at the John Cage Trust, we've been in existence since 93. So we're coming up on 30 years in 2 more years, which is pretty amazing, actually. But all I was going to say apropos this conversation is that I would say that every 8 to 10 years, so 3 times now, we see a shift happen with regard to interest in Cage or knowledge of Cage. And I never forgot about 20 years after Cage's passing, almost exactly, all of a sudden I'm getting texts or emails or phone calls from 18 to 20 year olds saying, who is this guy? I just read somewhere that he was the world's first DJ, or he was using electronic, or he was using records and record players for as compositional instruments, as musical instruments. And so it definitely has changed here as well. Right now with COVID, it's so tricky, isn't it? Because we just don't have performances going on. So I don't know what's going to happen if this ever lifts, whether or not when the dust settles or blows away, whatever it is, what kind of world we'll find.
Definitely there were some extraordinary conditions for sound artists because cities were quieter. I mean, there were some environments that were radically changed in an unexpected way. But overall, it was just, to put it mildly or politely, annoying. Because yeah, you couldn't move too much. You couldn't. I mean, here in Estonia, where I live, the lockdown were never so strong, so we could still move. And because of the density of the population is not really high, so even if you go out, you wouldn't bump into people that often. But I hope we get to the root, what we were used to. We were used to before this outbreak started.
Yeah. Stefano, we need to close, but at your recommendation, we're going to listen to an early work by John Cage entitled Dream, which was used to accompany the eponymous solo dance by Merce Cunningham, which he performed on May 8, 1948 at Stevens College in Columbia, Missouri. Cunningham described Cage's music as a lyric piece, and he recalled his own choreography as containing a lot of terrible balances, having to stand up on one foot for a long time and then releve. Cage would perform Dream at Black Mountain College a few months later on August 20th, 1948. But we'll be listening to it today as performed by the late Italian pianist,
Gianni Lenoci.
From his 2011 album, One, John Cage Piano Music. Stefano, can you tell us something about Lenoci and the label on which his work appeared? It's Silta Records, I think, which I understand is no longer operational.
That's correct. I spoke to the, Lenoci unfortunately passed away a year and a half ago. And I had been in touch with him since 2006, I think. Almost around the same time I started digging for the infamous clip of Cage. And we exchanged music. I mean, he's a pianist. He was teaching music. And he really liked, I mean, I really found some common traits, Cajun traits. We really found common ground there regarding Cage. And so when you told me that I had to choose a piece, since our relationship, my friendship or relationship, I would say, with Johnny interrupted abruptly because of his passing away, I think it would have been nice to remember him with this piece from this album, which I really like, because when I saw it, I saw this picture of a train station in the night in Italy, and I love trains and train stations, so I already from the outside it was good, it was looking good, and also the music there is actually good. The label is Silta Records, but it's no longer working, although I spoke to the wife and the owner of the ex-owner of the label, and they both agreed giving us the permission to play it. They were really, really, really nice, and they really liked the idea. So the guy, the ex-owner, he said that basically we can go to any, I saw it on Spotify, for example. So any digital musical platform should, the listeners who are curious to dig into Johnny Lenoci can find that album as well as his others.
Great. Thank you so much. And that's Lenoci, Lenoci.
Correct.
Stefano, it's been a pleasure. I hope we can do this again. Maybe we can talk about Il Treno next time, which is Cage's composition for moving train. Anyway,
yeah.
It's been a pleasure. Take care of yourself, and until we meet again.
Now let's listen to Gianni Lenoci performing John Cage's Dream. Thank you.
Thank you.